Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Archer's Direct Connect. We're excited to be here with you today. Joining me today is one of my great friends and colleague and longtime Phoenix Coyote fan, Tim Starr. Tim's a compliance analyst at APS. He's worked in a variety of roles over the years in his career in IT, OT, and compliance positions, and has a broad and deep understanding of NERC-SIP concepts, compliance concepts, and more specifically, OT and IT environments.
Thanks for having me, Brent.
Yeah, no, we're excited to have you on board today. And we'll talk a lot about NERC-SIP compliance. I really want to talk about compliance challenges, issues that you've seen throughout your career, and really kind of hone in on some of the successes that you've seen, maybe a couple of examples that you can share with us today. So let's start with this, Tim. Tell us about yourself, specifically how you ended up as a compliance and risk analyst.
So I have a very interesting career path, I guess you could say. Graduated college. I started working as a social worker. I have a degree in sociology, of all things. And I started working as a social worker for the state and ended up doing that for about 5 years. Got burnt out, got tired of dealing with other people's problems. And then I went into IT. I worked in an operations center for about 3 years, and then I ended up going into becoming an actual server administrator over SIP systems. Did that for a couple years, and then I got the opportunity to take over the risk and compliance position at the entity I'm at right now. And I've been working in SIP since and trying to improve things and doing all the stuff that I got to do since then. So it's just interesting how I went from social worker to IT to basically social work of SIP.
Social worker of SIP. I love that because, you know, you mentioned something in your intro there, like, you know, I got tired of dealing with other people's problems. I don't think that's changed much for you, Tim.
No, it has not. It is now it's different people's problems. And it's interesting. This is kind of a tangent, but dealing with people who have mental illness and dealing with people who have to deal with SIP, there's a lot of correlation in that because SIP drives people crazy.
It really does. Again, appreciate you joining us today, but I got a question to kind of start things off here. From your perspective, that OT operational background, as well as the compliance side, what do you think is the number one priority an entity should focus on when dealing with compliance risks?
First off, you got to make sure your security controls are good in place. If you don't have security controls, then you got nothing. I mean, somebody can just knock on the door and say, oh, hey, I'm going to go and steal all your BCSI. I'm going to mess with all your systems, right? So you have to make sure you have good foundations and security. That's a key for IT in general, but especially so with SIP because we're dealing with such critical information. Processes and procedures have to be pretty solid. Obviously, you want to improve and work on them, constantly improving, constantly challenging your employees, constantly challenging your entities to be better. You have to do better. There is no way to fail forward in SIP. It is not a good thing. We all know what happens with the repercussions of that if we do not do that successfully. And lastly, I mean, if you don't have your access management good and you don't use the correct tool or you don't have the correct procedures or the correct people that know what they're doing, that's going to be a lot of pain and a lot of headaches. SIP 10 is also important. I mean, if you don't know how to change your systems and make them secure, you got issues. So I'd say those are probably the main things you want to focus on.
Yeah, well said. You know, you do a defense in depth posture, take that, you know, let's secure the perimeter, talk about the edges. How do we establish those, you know, those pinch points that we're going to monitor and maintain that security posture through those pinch points. Then you bring in access controls, access management. Managing your human capital is a significant challenge in the NERC-SIP space. You know, you have that, those high frequency obligations, the quarterly and annual reviews that come up, as well as, you know, people moving in and out of your environments. And whether you're working in a small or a large environment, it doesn't really matter. The impact is the same. That's going to take some time, effort, and energy from some people. And lastly, you mentioned, you know, patch and change management. If you're not competently aware of what's required to change your systems and you don't have good process in place to handle or address those changes, you will find yourself in a bad audit experience likely, right? And likely self-reporting some of those issues. You mentioned policies, programs, procedures. How have you found in your career the best ways to successfully operationalize NERC-SIP policies and procedures? Because as you know, subject matter experts, they don't like change. And so when you come in with, you know, hey, we're making a change to, or an adjustment to this policy, program, procedure doc, how have you seen success in your career operationalizing those, working with your subject matter experts?
So I'll give an example. When the software verification requirement became a thing, one of the things that we did was we had everybody come together and basically had a melting pot discussion. Okay, how would we do it with our entity? What's our best option? What does good look like, right? And then from there, we built out our specific policy and procedure for that. I think having everybody that is involved in a specific standard or a change or just a process improvement procedure, whatever it might be, having people come together and say, okay, this is what I think good looks like. This is what I think would be a good procedure or policy. This is how I foresee this working. And then you can go from there and pick a part of it and say, okay, that looks good, but the standard says this. So let's work with that, but we'll have to make it work with our standard. And then, of course, you know, your true test is after you do implement those procedures and policies and everything is good, then you get an audit. And then you're like, okay, now we really get to look at this and see how good we did. And thankfully for us, we didn't have any issues when we got audited at my entity. So I think that's a really good, and it's a challenge, right? It goes back to the social work thing. You got to deal with a bunch of different personalities. A lot of people have egos. A lot of people have their own, you know, things that they want to see happen, their own little pet projects that they're trying to sneak in. And you really just have to be cognizant of that and make sure that everybody's okay with it, and especially the people that are above you.
Yeah, no, well said. I love the fact that you think, let's bring those subject matter experts to the table to help establish what those policies, programs, procedures look like. Let's get them involved early, because that puts skin in the game for them, right? You know, each of us, you know, we're either a victim of our experience or we're a survivor of our experience, right? Maybe they're one and the same. But the reality is that's the perspective that we bring to the table. And often it's different and unique. And so having those working sessions, working with your subject matter experts to make sure that any program, policy, you know, process change or rollout has their involvement really makes, you know, I think you're 100% right on that, making sure that you get the best possible product for your organization. Let's talk for a minute about training. You know, we talked about the human capital in the last section there, but you know, in your experience, how do you ensure that people A, know the policy, know the process, understand it, and then can live and live and breathe it every single day as they come to work and do their, you know, various activities in their CIP space? How do you ensure that training is effective?
Well, I think it all starts with how you write up your work instructions, how you have your documentation, how you have your planning set up, all the stuff for that. If you can do that solidly, you get a good foundation for that, and then you can work with your SMEs to train people in those specific processes and procedures. If you get really good SMEs that are really passionate about this stuff, that's going to exude into the other people that they're training. So, you know, you get good people in good positions to be the air quote SMEs and leaders. They have that passion for helping people, training people, that sort of thing, and it'll trickle down into the other people you're trying to train. Other than that, it's the hands-on. I mean, what is it, like 80% of people learn from doing, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to say, okay, we have this new procedure, this new process. Let's test it. Let's do this thing. That's where SIP9 comes in, right? Like when you have a brand new environment that you're standing up, you got to know how to bring it back from the brink if something bad happens. It's part of the experience of dealing with all these fun processes and procedures that you're putting in. And it feels like we've been exponentially increasing all these new implementation plans as of late with everything that's been coming to light with all these various cyber attacks and everything else in our world.
Yeah, no, it's funny you mentioned that. I was on the phone earlier today with someone. We were talking about the changes in SIP for low impact for SIP 3-9 and looking at onward to SIP 3-11 and 3-12 and how much how many similarities I'm seeing with just what they're pulling out of medium impact and high impact areas specific to electronic access controls, AV malware type prevention tools they want rolled out there, as well as the INSM, right? That's going to be a huge issue, internal network security monitoring capabilities. So it's like we're getting to that point. I know I've preached this for years from an Archer perspective. It's like we're getting to that point where there's no such thing as low anymore, and it's getting closer and closer as these changes and these continued escalation of regulation continue to roll out broader and more deeply inside of our environment. So, and that's going to take more training when you think about it, right? You got to do the same thing, rinse and repeat, get the right leadership in place, get them involved early, have, you know, there's very few of us that have a passion bucket full for NERC SIP stuff. I am one of those. And I know you are one of those where, you know, our passion bucket floweth over sometimes from a NERC SIP perspective, because we really enjoy this work. Anyway, there's very few of us that are passionate about, you know, NERC SIP work, right? And we are a couple of those. And so finding like-minded souls to go in and lead the charge to help train those folks and keep them engaged, those subject matter experts, can be a daunting task. But if you find the right person and then you have good process procedure underlying that, it makes for great success. You mentioned another thing I want to ask about. I'd never thought of SIP 9 recovery planning as kind of the culmination of use case and test scenarios. But you're 100% right, right? We have to have the ability to bring a system back from the brink if we are required to do so. So in your experience, what's the best way to address all the nuances that exist there from a recovery planning perspective specific to SIP 9? How do you get the people involved? How do you do it right?
The reality of SIP 9 is it should be simple. You're trying to back up and you're trying to recover things. Unfortunately, we all know from experience how difficult SIP 9 actually is, especially R2.2, because what is usable and compatible with current configurations? What's a good backup? And if you get people together and you make, weird as it sounds, you got to make SIP 9 fun. Like, okay, you got to make it simple, you got to make it fun, and you got to make it something that's a regular cadence and it's always in people's minds. So, you know, obviously we have the annual testing that has to be done, and in lieu of an actual incident, there's the operational exercises that have to happen every 3 years. If you make the operational exercises fun and engaging and not just we're going to do this, okay, do the procedure, blah, blah, blah. You know, don't make it boring. Make it fun. Make it an event, because then you're going to get people more engaged and more energized to do this. Tabletops. Throw some wonky, random things that no one will ever think would actually happen, like lightning striking a building and causing just a specific rack to blow up. Something like that. Make it fun and simple. And, you know, you have people go through it. Obviously, the intention is you want to be serious and you want to make sure your backups are good. But constantly having these discussions and constantly having people bring up their mind, I mean, having meetings regularly with your teams just to see, okay, where are you guys at with all your standards? And trying to keep SIP 9 in mind, where are your backups? When's the last time you had a good backup? What's your procedure if something happened? Just spot checking your teams periodically is a really good way to get people to think about SIP 9 and really think, okay, am I doing enough? Is this, if something bad happens, you know, I mean, again, in the reality of where we're living today in this world, you got to always think about how you're going to come back from the brink of disaster. Mm-hmm. It's an unfortunate thing, but you have to have it in your mind at all times.
You know, using SIP 9 as your measuring tape, right? As your measuring stick to say, how are we doing? Can we really do this? Because that's what it's about, is preventing the system from failing, right? Preventing outages and events from cascading downstream. So great insight. Making it fun, I think, is critical, right? Helping people recognize that this is a good opportunity for them to exercise their skill, right? This is your chance, right? We've worked on change management, patch management, the stuff we do, managing our human capital, all that stuff is day to day. This is the culmination type of event where we can spend time with the other teams, immersed in the NERC processes so that we can get better, right? To help ourselves get better. So, well, Tim, I really want to thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure just chatting with you, and it's a good catching up. I can see your Phoenix Coyotes pennant back there in the back. Do you have anything to add to that? I I'm a Utah hockey fan, and so I'm excited for the future here in Utah. But what would you like to say from a Phoenix Coyote fan perspective?
Well, obviously, I'm sad and disappointed. Having been basically a fan since they got here in '96, and being at the old America West Arena, and then being there in Glendale growing up in that area when everything was being built, and I never went to Mullet, mostly because I was upset about them moving, but let this be a lesson for SIP. If you have bad ownership, if you have people that aren't caring about your product, that are only there for the dollars and cents, and they're not looking at the big picture and they're looking at the people that they impact, you're going to have this outcome. You know, it goes back to human nature, right? There's been lots of rumors about how people are treated in that organization, how the players and the staff are treated. If you don't treat your people right, you don't treat them like actual human beings, that's kind of an outcome that you're going to get. And that sounds like a really good SIP moment for a meeting. I think I might use that now.
Very good SIP moment. Very good SIP moment. Pertinent and relevant. So I'm excited to have a hockey club up here. Tim, you know, and this holds anytime you're going to come up to Utah for a game, I'll buy. So you make your way up here. I will make sure we go enjoy a hockey game at the Utah Hockey Globe together.
I'm all about that.
Thanks.
I'll
again
even wear my Coyotes jersey.
Please do. I mean, it'll be a throwback when you think about it. That's what we want. We want those, you know, that throwback. So it'll be awesome. Thanks again, Tim. Appreciate you being here. All those that were able to listen today, hopefully you found some value in that. And we love doing these direct connects and just getting time to visit with people that we've had great experiences with and had a great time with over the years. So hopefully that knowledge and insight was helpful. This is Brent Castaneto signing off for Direct Connect.
Thank you again, everybody. Have a good day.
Not only is Direct Connect available to listen to, you can also watch each episode on our YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/@ArcherU. If you're interested in who we are and what we do, you can head on over to our website at archerint.com. You can also follow us on our social media platforms, Archer International on Facebook, Archer Energy Solutions LLC on LinkedIn, and at Archer SEC on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and check back every other week for brand new episodes of Direct Connect.